For the last few years, we've been hosting dynamic conversations on our show about our personal health and wellness and the connection with addressing climate change, because it's all connected. It's all one big story. Prioritizing our own health and creating healthy communities are keys to establishing a sustainable, socially just global environment. And we know that now. Today's podcast is a part of those ongoing conversations, especially as a cornerstone of occupational therapy work is asking what matters to you when it comes to patient care instead of what's wrong with you. And what a switch. In my other career, I did mental health for at-risk children and families. And instead of asking them to identify their problems, we would say, what are your strengths? And I haven't introduced the guest yet. She's nodding to me, so I'm skipping ahead a little bit. But what a paradigm shift it was for families to be asked their strengths. So instead of saying, what's wrong with you? What matters to you? Hey, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. Before I dive in and introduce our guest and all of the good information she has to share with us, let me wax poetic for just a minute now about the sponsor of this podcast and a great partner of Mrs. Green's World, Tucson Medical Center. When it comes to my own health, the health of my family, and the health of our community, TMC is there for all of us. Whether it's classes for seniors, support groups for people with cancer, for those taking care of loved ones with Alzheimer's, or sponsoring a run for young girls, TMC is the community-based hospital making good things happen. And this is from the bottom of my very green heart. And I'm going to go a little bit into that at the very end of the show. So now on with the show, as they say. I am very pleased to welcome our in-studio guest, Emily Rich. Emily is an occupational therapist at TMC, where she works with children, adolescents, and adults. She specializes in treating chronic conditions, which I am going to ask her to tell us about and pronounce. And if that's not enough, Emily is pursuing her PhD at Texas Women's University. And I was reading this, I'm like, of course she is. She's doing that, and then she's working on a PhD, where she conducts research specific to postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. Did I say it right, Emily?
Tachycardia.
Okay, there. I take coaching. POTS in rehabilitation. Emily, it really is wonderful to have you here. And I'm glad we got on the show, because I could have spent another half hour in the pre-show conversations, because I think I am among the general population that has maybe an idea what occupational therapy is, not really what it is, but I am that non-professional that we want this show to get to educate. And I think it's vast. I think most people don't know what it is. So why don't we start with an understanding of what it is you do?
That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. I'm so excited to get to talk about both occupational therapy and also POTS, a condition that I
You can
care
tell
a lot
I am.
About.
It's like, yes. I don't know about this. And that's part of the reason I love doing these shows. It's like, it's learning, constant learning.
Yes, I'm so excited to be able to share a bit about that. So I'm an occupational therapist, and what that means is I help people to increase their independence and their quality of life. So through things that occupy your time, so things like getting ready in the morning, taking a shower, cooking, going to work, going to school, driving, anything that occupies your time, I'm here to help you be able to do those things.
So for people that can normally do it, something happens, and then all those things we take for granted. I'm like, what do you need therapy for? Those are things we get up and do and don't think about. So you come in when people can't do that.
Exactly.
When driving a car is an issue or a thing.
Exactly. So whether it's that you have a progressive kind of condition that, you know, is taking away some of your function, we figure out how to modify activities so that way you can continue to be able to do things that matter to you. Or if you have some kind of acute condition or something that happened to you and you're going to be able to get better, then we figure out how to get you from point A to point B. And so that's through rehabilitative kinds of activities. And the unique unique thing about occupational therapy is that we actually use occupations or those daily activities as part of your rehab. So instead of having you use a dumbbell and get stronger, and that way we actually have you in the kitchen reaching for things in your kitchen, cooking, stirring in a bowl.
Stuff you do.
Exactly. And so the great thing about it is that people get to actually see how therapy is helping them, because it's on a day-to-day basis actually doing the things that they want to be able to do.
So is there, I want to reach for, I know one of the words that I practice quite a bit, and thank you for the phonetic spelling, is dysautonomia. Dysautonomia.
You've got it. Dysautonomia.
Dysautonomia. So what is it?
Yeah. So dysautonomia is an umbrella term that encompasses lots of different conditions, POTS being one of those conditions. But overall, dysautonomia is a dysfunction of your autonomic nervous system. Okay, so your autonomic nervous system is things that you don't even think about that just happen in your body. So things like breathing, digestion, heart rate, sweating, temperature regulation.
You're not actively doing any of those.
Exactly. It's just automatic. And so that's your autonomic nervous system. So in individuals who have autonomic nervous system dysfunction, one or many of those things have kind of gone haywire. So they're not typically happening the way that they happen for other people. And so one condition under that umbrella is called POTS, and that's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So,
oh my God, that is like, thank God they gave it POTS as
exactly.
an acronym. That's a mouthful.
It is. And so we call it POTS. And it's not the things in your kitchen like pots and pans, right? It's a condition. And it's actually relatively common. Unfortunately, the term rare is used a lot, and that's not actually true. It impacts between 1 to 3 million people just in the United States alone. And what it means is, since it's a syndrome, it's a collection of symptoms. So it's not a disease or something that's progressive like that. It's just all these symptoms that we don't really understand. So we lump them all together because they happen a lot in these people. And so it's things like when they go from lying down or from sitting down to standing up, they have tachycardia or heart increase,
kidding
the heart rate.
Me. Okay.
So basically, to get a diagnosis, within 10 minutes of standing, your heart rate has to increase 30 beats per minute or 40 beats per minute in children, which is dramatic. And so when they stand up, a lot of times people say, oh, I think I have that because I sometimes feel a little dizzy when I stand up. Well, this is very extreme. So this is that feeling every single time that you really even lift your head off the bed, or definitely changing positions, standing still for too long of a period of time. And what's happening is that the blood isn't flowing through their body appropriately. So a lot of times when you stand up, you know, everyone's blood goes down a little bit into their legs because of gravity, but it just adjusts and your body compensates for it. Your blood pressure changes and we're all good. But for people with POTS, that doesn't happen. So their heart races really fast to try and pump that blood back up. And unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't work, or their heart just kind of goes off the rails and just keeps getting faster and faster. And it takes them a while to be able to get back to kind of a homeostasis, a normal heart rate and kind of regulation of their body.
So let's take a 14-year-old.
Okay.
And I was very disturbed to see that it's children, adolescents, and adults, mm-hmm. especially since I never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of occupational therapy, thank
yes.
goodness. But I'm like, what the heck? So what do they tell their mother?
Yeah.
So that you can get to the, this is like to me one of those obscure, how the heck does it get diagnosed? So what do they say, mom, I feel like I'm going to faint, or mom, I'm sweating, or mom, whatever, or does mom notice? And I'm saying mom because let's face it, primary caregiver, it's just,
yes.
you know, you give birth to them and you're watching what's going on. And
yeah.
I'm not trying to be sexist.
Yeah, and that's often the case, right? Moms are a lot of times empathetic, and so they're willing to listen. So I'm so glad you asked, because this is very important. This is typically what happens. Kids go to their parents, and sometimes it's dismissed. And so we want to make sure that we are recognizing what the symptoms could be. So typically, a child, you know, or an adolescent typically is the age. It's women of childbearing age is the most common. So it's about 80% women.
Wow.
And usually of childbearing age. A lot of times, children, when they're going through puberty and becoming adolescents, that's when they start to experience symptoms. So they might be Having those symptoms of their heart racing, they might feel what we call palpitations or their heart really pounding in their chest. But a lot of people don't feel that. They just feel like, I'm going to pass out. But a lot of times they don't pass out. We say that POTS is kind of a condition of feeling faint. It's not really a fainting condition. Some people do faint. But for most, it's this feeling like you're going to faint. So you might have blurred vision. You might have some gastrointestinal issues. So on a regular basis, just feeling, constipation, bloating, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, all of those fun symptoms that don't seem to go with this. I'm having these symptoms of feeling like I'm going to faint. And now I feel like I'm going to throw up and I can't see. My vision's going black. They might have leg weakness. They might have dizziness that might go with kind of feeling like they're rocking on a boat is kind of what we hear a lot. Also just feeling unsteadiness, having weird sensations in their legs or their arms. And then a big one that's missed a lot of times is cognitive symptoms or thinking challenges. So, for example, a 14-year-old, if they're in school, they're having trouble concentrating. They're having attention challenges, which might look kind of like a kid with ADHD, but this child doesn't have ADHD. This is just inconsistently, they're not able to focus. And if we think about, blood being able to circulate through their body, a lot of times their blood's draining from their head. So they're having trouble focusing. They're having trouble finding words. They'll be in the middle of a sentence and they can't figure out what word they were going to say, or forgetting someone's name. And so those are, this huge spectrum of
kidding. I'm sitting here thinking it's so vast.
Yes.
And I knew the show was going to be personal for me, and I knew I might get emotional because of things going on in my family. But my grandson is 15, and they're on the merry-go-round of a diagnosis. He's 15. Of course, he's adorable and smart and all those perfect things, but my daughter, and they live in a rural area in New Mexico, so TMC not available. And they've been referred to a series of specialists in Santa Fe and Albuquerque. One of the first things I'm going to do when this podcast is over is send her the file so she can listen to it. And I'm not being Dr. Murphy Darling here, but it's obscure what's happening to him. It's not repetitive. He is passing out. I mean, a lot of the things you mentioned. And what immediately comes to mind for me as you're talking, how the heck does it get diagnosed with the vast sea of choices? And I'm a TMC fan, and I'm going to say why. It's not because they're a sponsor or a partner. It's because of my life and my husband's life. But how do they find it, Emily?
Yeah, so it's kind of amazing.
That's a big question, I know, but it's like, whoa, tell me.
So I speak a lot about POTS and have been able to have a lot of opportunities to educate, and it's
educate doctors?
Yes, actually.
That's what I was going to say, because they have everybody expects them to work miracles and know everything, and I don't.
Yes.
The body, I don't want to have to know what's going on in the body, because it's a complex carbohydrate.
Exactly.
So you work with doctors.
Yeah, definitely, and educating the community as well. And it's fascinating how many times I tell the story of POTS, or, people say, what do you do? And I say, I specialize in this condition. They start asking, and they either say, wow, that's so weird. I know someone who has those
Here
symptoms.
Here I am.
They can't figure it out. It's amazing.
I am.
Or my friend just got diagnosed with this, so definitely we think that the incidence is pretty stable. So we don't really think that this is happening more. We just think that people are getting diagnosed more. And that's great news, because so often people are diagnosed with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or they're diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a very vague diagnosis. It just means you're tired a lot and doesn't give you much explanation for what to do. So fortunately, more people are getting diagnosed. And the way we go about that is typically you go to your primary care first. That's one of my goals, is to help educate primary care and also school nurses. A lot of people go to their school nurse and they just stop going because, they can't do anything for them. So they just
feel like having strep throat.
Exactly. It's not clear. And so, they go to their primary care first, typically, and then they refer to a specialist. So hopefully they're referred to either neurologist or cardiologist. Either of those physicians does treat POTS. It's kind of a nervous system disorder, so a lot of times neurologists treat it, but it presents as looking like a heart condition. It's not actually a heart condition, but because they have heart racing, cardiologists also treat it, and it's about blood flow. So you're referred to one of those physicians, and then typically they'll do bedside orthostatic testing or vitals, basically looking at your heart rate and your blood pressure when you go from laying down to standing up. So first is to see, do you qualify for that criteria? Unfortunately, there's no real test. There's not a blood test or a genetic test to say, yep, you have POTS, this is, you present with these symptoms, therefore we're going to give you this diagnosis. Some clinics do have a tilt table test. There's someone in town here who does have one. And what you do basically is you're strapped down to a table and then they slowly move you at an incline from laying down to standing up. And a lot of people can't even last the 10 minutes because they get so dizzy and they feel like they're going to pass out and can be pretty scary.
I'm like blown away.
Yeah.
And do they do like an EKG? My grandson had an EKG.
Yes.
So that's one of the the battery of tests he's having done.
Yes, exactly. So an EKG, sometimes an electrocardiogram as well, to look at structure and function of the heart and be sure there's nothing defective with the heart, right? You want to make sure that it's not a primary heart condition, that it's something else. So it's kind of a condition of ruling out other diagnoses, and then we're left with this is probably what it is. So that's
a really big answer, though. I mean, it's just there are so many obscure things. One of the staff of Mrs. Green's World, her daughter got diagnosed with a condition. She's like prepubescent, and she vomits. Mm-hmm. She has vomited. It lasts for about 3 hours. Mm. She doesn't get sick other than vomiting. Mm-hmm. And then it's done. She has no fever, anything. Yeah. So they had to do a series of work. Mm-hmm. And it's because she's entering puberty. And it's one of the diagnoses that they've come up with. Like, I never heard of that.
Yeah.
But it's in these weird diagnosis syndrome. And thank goodness, because you know, she'll start throwing up at 3, she's finished at 5:30, and she wants to go to school. Mm-hmm. Well, now she has permission to go to school because it's not contagious. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's where it falls. Yeah. So how does it impact a person's life? Like literally, what happens to, like you say, the mom with 3 kids who's gets diagnosed? Mm-hmm. How does it impact your quality of life? And are there degrees of, man, you don't want to have, you know, POTS extreme, you want to have POTS light. You know where I'm going with this. Like, are there varying degrees of the impact it has on your life?
Yeah, absolutely. And the condition you're describing sounds like cyclic vomiting syndrome.
That's what's called.
Another condition I'm
passionate
about. Oh, Kelly
will be so proud of me. Cyclic vomiting syndrome.
It's so infrequently diagnosed and not uncommon.
SVS?
CVS, yep.
CVS, that's right, cyclic.
And actually not that uncommon with POTS. And so it's not funny, but it's ironic. There's this collection of conditions.
I'm telling everybody in the world about what's happening. But she would want other parents to know that there's not something deathly wrong with your daughter.
Yes, right. Yeah, okay. It's a condition. And
I'm so glad you knew it.
Yeah,
she just told me this morning and I already forgot.
It's not uncommon with POTS. And there's other conditions like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and some of these other conditions that, you know, once you know someone with it, you know the name of it because it impacts their life so much.
And if you're like me, you don't exactly remember it, but I got you the message enough to know.
Exactly. So it can be such a cycle of going from doctor to doctor and trying to figure it out. I think, I want to say the average right now for people with POTS is, I don't know, somewhere between 8 to 10 doctors that they have to see before they get a diagnosis. And the average, it takes 4.5 years to get diagnosed with this. Yeah. So it's not where it should be, and that's where education is so important. So the way it presents a lot of times is, so you said, like mentioned a mom, if she's a mom with 3 kids, so definitely childcare is impacted. If you're trying to wrangle 3 kids around, you're doing a lot of getting down on the ground, standing up, moving around a lot. And every time you change positions, that's typically provoking symptoms.
I can't imagine.
Right. So you can picture how this truly impacts every area of life, because if you're going grocery shopping, you're standing in a line for a long period of time, and standing is not a long period of time, but relatively speaking for these individuals, standing still is really hard. The blood pools in their legs because they're not moving and they're not pumping their blood. Definitely showering. It's hot in the shower. There's not good ventilation. And so your blood vessels open up. And so all the blood's pulling. So they feel like they're going to pass out in the shower. And a lot of people fall in the shower. And so that's where part of my job is helping them to be safe in the shower. Definitely driving. You know, you have things moving past you. Dizziness symptoms with the world kind of moving. Work in school. We talked about those thinking challenges. They're able, you know, have trouble being able to think through things at work and at school, let alone the physical demands of work or school. Even eating, you know, we talk about those gastrointestinal symptoms. A lot of times these people have to go on very specific diets, being able to do housework, you know, reaching down, cleaning, using a vacuum. You know, it's just so much moving your body. And so anything that's a physical demand like that. And then at the root of my profession really is also even just like socializing with friends and being able to do things that you care about, like hobbies, we call leisure activities in OT. And because they're not able to do those things anymore, because whether, you know, they can't physically go bowling or go do
play
activities.
Tennis,
exactly.
Or, yeah.
Or even the thinking symptoms sometimes are even worse because it's like, I'm embarrassed that I can't come up with the words or that I can't hold a conversation anymore. And the kind of hobby activities just fall to the wayside. It's like managing my health is the most important thing right now. Those don't really matter. And so when people come to my office, it's so important to me that they do engage in those hobbies again, because that's going to get them out of bed every day. That's going to get you.
Depression.
Exactly.
Which can certainly impact your physical health.
Absolutely.
Depression would have to be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
What causes it? Do they know, like, why does someone get it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it chronic and forever?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get cured? I mean, that's like four questions. So have at it, Emily.
Yeah. So unfortunately, like I said, it's a syndrome. So we don't really understand POTS.
Syndrome, you did say that.
There's a lot of research being done by a group called Dysautonomia International. They're wonderful with raising money and getting more research funds. But right now, what we know is that it happens with a lot of other conditions. So like I said, people with a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, or it's joint hypermobility. It's these people who are really flexible, kind of double-jointed people. There's a condition called mast cell activation syndrome, which is kind of an allergic reaction to the world. Migraine headaches, mood disorders, celiac disease is not uncommon, Sjogren syndrome, irritable bowel syndrome. So we know it often happens with those conditions. And then more than anything, it's triggered by a viral illness.
Got it.
So that's one thing that can cause it. Also a head injury, even pregnancy. So some people, all of a sudden, they wake up one day and they have POTS and they have symptoms. And that's usually those who've had some kind of viral illness or pregnancy or concussion, a head injury. Other people with these other diagnoses, like hypermobility, it's kind of a more insidious onset. A lot of times it's like, I started feeling this way like 2 years ago, it's getting worse or it's persistent. And so it's really varied in terms of how it presents. But typically what's happening is it's, again, like this, their autonomic nervous system is just not working right and the blood is pooling in their legs and so it's not circulating properly. So that's kind of what we know. I wish
we
knew
again,
more.
Yeah, but again, it's really a complex carbohydrate. There isn't a simple answer, which makes it even harder to diagnose, which makes me more inspired than ever to get lots of people to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
Because I could probably sit here and come up with five people who have things wrong with them and they're not quite sure what it is. You know what I mean? They don't all have POTS, but
absolutely,
the diagnosis trail can be just absolutely daunting and depressing, especially in the world of, you know, they told my daughter that she had to wait till March for one appointment. She's a mom. She said, you know what? That's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is not acceptable. My son is passing out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like there's a medical system, which this is not mm-hmm. the topic of this conversation, mm-hmm. but an overtaxed, overburdened medical system. So
The wait lists are often a year for people for POTS. Mayo
How
Clinic's
encouraging.
Mayo is one of the best places to go. And luckily, TMC, we're a Mayo Clinic care network hospital, so that's great. But I know the wait list up there is a year. So fortunately, we do have several providers in Tucson. And I think just getting awareness in the community about the condition and who the people are that are treating, it's really helpful. Definitely the wait list for this. And even if you're even going to the right doctor, I mean, people wait forever just to get into a GI doctor. It's some of these specialty centers. And so then they're not even getting to really the person who's going to diagnose this. So in our community, the wait lists aren't as long, which is really encouraging. And we are working really hard. We have a group of providers in Tucson that we've started of all different people. So therapists, doctors from all different disciplines, mental health providers who all meet quarterly. And we're working on educating the community and really knowing who do we refer to? How can we make care better for these patients? So
it's daunting to me, even what you said. I mean, it's really daunting. And I did a podcast interview with someone from the Mayo Clinic and someone from TMC that was responsible for the whole visioning and implementation of that partnership. And to me, as a walking billboard for TMC, it makes me feel really good to know that if something goes really wrong, we have access to the Mayo Clinic Brain Trust.
Absolutely.
Because that's a partnership that is just, to me, invaluable. And you don't have to drive up to Phoenix, which is also a big plus. So you have therapies to treat it. Is there a pill for that? I mean, it's always that horrible question that I don't even want to ask, because pills are not always the answer. In our American culture, they become that. The drug industry trumps all. But are there appropriate medications where it can help?
Yes. So there are several medications. As an OT, I try and use anything besides that
first.
Right.
I would figure you'd be more in the prevention and treatment side than there's a pill for that.
Yes. And I mean, we've seen with like chronic pain management and things, right? It's like you're just going to need more and more and meds. And so how can we back off the meds? That's not always the case here, but trying to always use lifestyle measures first is always our goal. And so we usually use those first and then we'll try a pharmaceutical kind of option. But in terms of the drugs that are available, sometimes beta blockers are used. There's different medications that help to constrict your blood vessels so that they can pump the fluid more effectively. It's drugs like one called midodrine. Sometimes we use SSRIs or different steroids like fludrocortisone. So they're drugs that are really only used mostly in POTS. A lot of times people see those drugs and they don't know what that is. But yeah, more so really trying to use the lifestyle changes. And fortunately, there's a lot that we can do. Once someone gets a diagnosis of POTS, I really believe that knowledge is power. And there's so many things that they can do in terms of lifestyle management to really improve their symptoms.
And does it go away for some people? Is there a cure? I mean, is it not necessarily a cure? I know there's a difference between a cure, but can an adolescent outgrow it? Can a woman who gets finished with menopause, does it go away? Or what's the long-term prognosis for someone that has it?
Yeah, so we don't have a ton of research on this either. We're working on it. But I want to say the number is about 20% of people do have complete resolution of symptoms from
the
studies. So that's, you know, fair. The number is higher in adolescents. So more adolescents do have full resolution of symptoms.
Kind of outgrow it.
There's this theory that they do. And, you know, it's hard because a lot of people hope for that and it's not always the case. So it's kind of my focus is more how can we manage the symptoms right now? We'll see, you know, if you do have complete resolution. But for majority of people, especially adults, they are going to have persistent symptoms. And so it's not common that they get worse. The reason why they would get worse typically is they have another condition that might worsen symptoms, or they're laying in bed and they can't get out of bed. Then they're only really going to get worse if they can't break that cycle. But otherwise, most people can see some resolution of symptoms and get back to doing what they need to do with some, you know, some symptoms still. So
that's a big answer. I mean, it's you hope that you're in the 20%. And in terms of your role, do you provide them with skills and modalities and things they can do, and then that ends? Or are they seeing Emily for a very long time?
Yeah, so my goal is not to see me for very long. I really try and get the best bang for our buck. I always say, like, let's just get you in and out. I don't want you here every week, and you don't want to be here every week either. So typically, I look at about 3 months. For some people, it's more than that, especially people whose function is, you know, they've lost a lot of their ability to do things. But usually, it's about 12 visits. So one time a week, I like to see people, and it's an hour at each appointment. And we're working on learning how to change your breathing. So some people with HATS, start to do really shallow breathing, especially in today's world. We already do a lot of chest breathing. That's kind of a stressed breathing.
I call it we don't breathe.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Like someone, I have one friend who will talk to me on the phone. She said, you're not breathing. Are you having a stressful day? I'm like, how the heck can you tell that by talking to me on the phone? But we don't. We are so busy. We forget to do that healthy kind of breathing.
Absolutely.
Just breathing, something as simple as that, which gets oxygen to your lungs and the blood flow and your heart and all that.
Yes.
That's a good news kind of thing.
Yeah, it's great. It's great for everybody, you know, and OTs treat people with anxiety and things like that, and we use the same skills with them. But working on abdominal or diaphragmatic breathing. So breathing from your belly instead of breathing from your chest. You take deeper breaths, they're relaxation breaths. And so with someone like POTS, someone with POTS, their body's in a state of fight or flight all the time. So it's this sympathetic nervous system. It's this fight or flight activation. And so the way we combat that is through taking deep breaths and basically trying to activate our rest and digest system and suppress that fight or flight. And so that helps with kind of releasing those parasympathetic nervous system symptoms. And also, it helps with blood flow. So at the root of it, POTS is often a blood flow issue. And so if we can help with getting more blood flowing through your body, then that's physiologically, you're actually changing
right.
what's happening in your body.
Right.
And then some other things that we do in OT. So physicians recommend that you increase your fluid and increase your salt. So people with POTS
are actually supposed
to eat a lot of salt. Yes. And so it's the doctor's orders, right?
I just don't think salt is a big bad wolf.
I agree. And
I don't.
Luckily, the research is showing us a little more of that. But definitely, so they're supposed to be eating between 8 to 10 grams of salt per day, which is quite a bit. So they salt lots of foods, often take salt supplements. They're actually taking salt pills.
What?
I know.
Salt licks in the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then also increasing their fluid to about 100 ounces per day. And so what happens when you do both of those things together is you increase your blood volume, the amount of blood you have in your body. So if you have more blood, less symptoms. And you have to drink fluid and salt for that to happen. We also use compression devices. So basically compression socks, like the ones that runners wear or athletes, but even tighter. So medical compression. And that helps to get blood flowing as well. Exercise is a huge one.
I was going to ask you that.
With
POTS. Is that good or bad? Can it hurt or does it help?
Exactly. So in the short term, it's harder and it causes them to have more symptoms. So a lot of times people exercise and it's like, this is making me worse.
Bad.
And it feels wrong, right? When something's hurting your body, like, why would I keep doing that? But there is this level of you have to challenge your body to a degree to be able to tolerate more. And so it's very slow progression of doing exercises, laying down in bed, actually just using your muscles, and then progressing to upright exercise, doing both strengthening and also cardiovascular exercise. So it's so intimidating for people with POTS. They can barely get out of bed. How are they supposed to exercise? So
yeah,
I
go run on the treadmill for 30 minutes.
Exactly.
How's that
right?
feel?
That's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen. So I help to break that down to say what's feasible and what's kind of this timeline that we could do this on. Physical therapists are also incredible in that exercise management. And we have a great PT who works on those things with those folks too. And then some other things that we do is just basically looking at your schedule of your daily life and saying, all right, you most of the time right now, you're sitting at home. You've lost the ability to work or go to school.
Wow.
For a lot of people, not all. And so it's like everything feels so daunting. How do I even start anything? And so that's when we say...
Baby steps.
Yes. Every day, you're going to get dressed. That's just, no matter what, you're going to get dressed or you're going to wash your face or whatever it is and get out of bed. And so for a lot of people, it's starting there. For others, it's, you know, how do I get back into school? Because I'm in college and I had to take a leave of absence and I don't know how to get back into it. And so let's take, non-credit courses like using Coursera or things like that where you're challenging your brain and you're working on getting back into that. But you're not, you know, spending all this money to then not be able to pass the classes and then adding one course at a time. So finding approachable ways, you know, back to driving. How do we start driving again? That's really scary after you've not been driving for a long time. And so looking at those routines and breaking down step by step, how do I do these things again?
And I'm so glad you went into that because even with all the questions I asked you and very, very, very present listening to the answers, I had no idea it could get to that stage of I would call it debilitation. I don't know if that's a word, but can be so debilitating that you would lose your job or have to drop out of school. It's not just like standing up and feeling faint. There are degrees of this. And what a road I can see that some people have to go down. And scary road at that. Yeah. So what a helpful conversation. And I think of things that you're talking about. And if you take a deeper cut, I call myself an Ambien survivor because my doctor, I take Ambien, you should take Ambien. Ambien's great. And boy, did it mess up my life and progressively messed up my life. So Ambien free for about 5 years now. Never, I will never even like look at Ambien again because I didn't realize how tired it was making me. But what one of the things that helped me sleep is breathing. I went to a therapist and she said, be a very aware of your breathing. Do deeper breathing. Well, instead of counting sheep, I have fallen asleep many nights by just being conscious of, you know, doing that deeper breathing. It and then works. You said exercise.
Yes.
These are things for all of us for life skills. Drink a lot of fluids. In someone that's spent most of her life trying to lose weight, if I drink a lot of water, I lose weight. If I just do that. So exercise for quality of life and they become ever so important for survival of people that really lost a lot of those things that we take for granted.
Absolutely.
I don't get up every day and say, I'm so grateful I can drive a car. I do notice a lot. I'm so grateful I have clean water. I'm so grateful I have a flush toilet. All of those things that I don't take for granted anymore. But what an informative conversation for me that, you know, I talk to everybody about everything. So now I'm not an expert on POTS. But I certainly can direct people to learn more about it when I will become now Dr. Diagnosis. You know, and I'm kidding, but I think I can be helpful to some of the people in my life right now to even eliminate it.
Yeah.
So is there any glaring thing that I missed? Because I am so deeply immersed in what your answers were and in shock to an extent of what that is out there. And then again, reassured that TMC is the place. To go and get help and, you know, and get direction. And maybe there are other places, but I don't have to know about them. I'm just happy that I know about this. So is there anything else that you wish I had asked and can think of that we should add?
I think I just want to make sure that people know that OT is out there. Unfortunately, in Tucson, we don't have a lot of occupational therapists that are treating chronic conditions really at all in outpatient clinics. And so just knowing that we're here in the clinic, we're actually opening a brand new clinic at TMC next month or in the next couple of months, which is really exciting.
One should only hope I get invited to the grand opening.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll mention that to
people. I'll get a private invite for you. And so we're going to have...
I'm counting on that.
We'll have OT, me, also speech therapy, physical therapy, and a dietitian. And so we're going to have a great team-based model. I'm so excited to have everyone in one room, being able to talk about patients and knowing that we will be the POTS specialists in town, which is really great. But that
and
we
it's
also...
the POTS specialist, not the POT specialist,
yeah,
everybody.
No, exactly.
Just make be very clear about that.
That's the unfortunate part of the name.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Definitely just knowing that we're there and that we're there for all kinds of different conditions too, really specializing in these chronic conditions that other people don't really treat.
And the one-stop shopping you're talking about.
Yes,
like I'm a big fan of the children's clinics because if you have a child with multiple diagnoses and handicaps, you can go to one place. You don't have to get Lyft or Uber or the taxi that the county provides. You can go from one office to the other and your child will get quality of care and they do case management like that.
Yes.
So I'm a big fan.
Yeah,
it's
that,
wonderful to know that.
That team-based model is so important. And then you're not getting, you know, that duplication of care. You're able to communicate with each other and patients get the best care that way. So yeah, we love that model too. Yep.
Well, this was truly... not just delightful and exciting for me, but really, really concrete, informative. And I always love to have the last word, which I don't have to have. You can say something after I'm finished. But, you know, sometimes I write up my ending and it sounds like I wrote it. And I started writing the ending for this, what I want to say. And this one's from the heart. So excuse me if I stumble a bit, but I have up close and personal intimate knowledge of TMC because my husband and I had 7 visits there in 2019. And this is the funny part of it. Excellent quality of care, the best. There were some close calls. We got response when he coded and a nurse sat by his side for 9 hours, like by his side.
Wow.
And if she was leaving, another nurse came in and slipped in her chair. Mm. So top quality of care. And I saw it, I'm a scanner, not just for me, but the way we're treated, the respect, the humor, the integrity, all of that. People being willing to give you their cell phone numbers, which I probably shouldn't even say on the air, but above and beyond, okay? So I can say that. And then I wanted to add a little humor to this. Because I got to spend so much time there waiting, I'm going to be a walking billboard for their cafeteria to the point where I don't want to embarrass myself, but they have good, healthy food.
Yes.
And they have good, unhealthy food because I enjoy guilty pleasures, especially when my husband's in the hospital.
Yes.
Like, oh yeah, a cheeseburger, no problem. But if I want a really good salad, I can get it. There's a lot of good choices there that are tasty. The other unknown treasure, I did a significant part of my Christmas shopping at the gift shop. Like, who knew?
It's the
best. I walked in there. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Walked in there. I'm like, look at this jacket.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look at, I mean, clothing
for
men and women.
Yeah.
Non-hospital.
Yeah.
Where you go in and there's like tchotchkes you never wanted to buy anybody ever. And then I bought birthday gifts because I was there, fortunately, when they had their big sale.
Oh, nice.
And one of the things that was very telling is doctors and nurses and all kinds of staff were in there taking advantage of it. And believe me, I took advantage of it. I wore some of the stuff for the holidays. But so you can check out the gift shop, even if you're not at TMC for a reason. There's free parking. So just go in and check it out. And then last but not least, I was fortunate again, James was kind enough to go in the hospital when they had their quilt exhibit and auction, which raises thousands of dollars for the hospital. And what work.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was stressed and sad and worried, I would just literally roam the quilt halls, as I called them. And when James got discharged, I asked him to come with me and look at some of the quilts. I mean, that's how good it was.
They're beautiful.
So, you know, you've got a lot of things going on at TMC. And I just wanted to say that from the bottom of my heart. And I keep asking them if I can be on one of their cool commercials, but no luck so far. I'm not giving up. I'm serious. Like, I am a billboard for you, and their commercials are so cool. The agency that does their commercials is waxing.
Yeah,
I mean, they're great,
yeah,
and colors and dancing and fun. Oh,
yes.
Kelly, our show producer, got asked to be on a commercial, but that's okay. I'm not feeling slighted. And then my last word really is thank you for showing up in my world, for what you do, for the obvious passion you bring to your job, for your passion to wanting to spread the word, because I can't fake it. And I loved this interview, and I am so happy that I got to meet you. And we're going to really do everything on our part. Our mission is to be an educational platform, and this falls in the category of a safe and socially just world. So thanks, Emily Rich. It was delightful.
Thank you.